Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, ready? Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
For what?
Ready for what?
Typical, disgusting display.
Oh, tonight we got them. Goldie, the Sulk, and JC.
And it starts right now.
So, welcome back to another episode of A Typical Disgusting Display, a podcast for writers by writers who hate writing. And JC asked us if we were ready right before we started.
I did.
Ready as we'll never be.
And there was silence.
Yeah, there was a little bit of Goldie grumbling. Yeah, I guess I'm ready. Sure.
I'm ready for what?
Yeah. Ready for what?
I was sitting there and I was like, maybe in this brief pause, there will be a massive earthquake. It's like, no, okay,
first
I guess
joke
we're
of
going.
The day. First joke of the day.
Too late. Sorry. Oh, well, speaking of massive earthquakes, I have my first ever colonoscopy.
Oh.
Wait, so the doctors couldn't get out of it?
Second joke of the day. They're going to take one look under the hood and be like, "What are you wiping with bamboo? What's going on back here? It's a mess."
Having a crisis of an identity crisis over your butthole. Like, I don't know why I ever went into this. This was my dad's dream, not mine.
Oh my God. It's like when in First Blood, when Rambo takes off his shirt and you see how horribly beaten and scarred he is. That's like, God. They're going to take one look at my butthole and be like, what happened to this guy?
The humanity.
Oh, God. So not looking forward to that. Although
are you going to like at least take your shower massage and clean it up before you go in there so they don't think you're some sort of bore?
I'm taking it day by day.
Oh, yeah.
When do you take the prep?
By the way, this is great because if you're listening to this on Monday, you might be listening to this right as a giant rod is being inserted into my anus. So it's going to be Monday. So today, as you're listening, I will be undergoing this procedure. And I guess you have to do one prep day.
When you're under euthanasia, will you be, euthanasia. When you're under anesthesia, yeah. Will you be less high than you normally are?
Nice. Return to propriform. Yeah, the doctor told me, he's like, yeah, the procedure's a piece of cake. You get those Michael Jackson drugs, it'll be great.
Wow.
I guess that's what
is anyone going to be videotaping you as you come out of the anesthesia? Well, if you have a Charlie bit my finger.
Interesting that you ask. Yeah. Because someone else on this podcast has stepped to the fore and volunteered to pick me up after the procedure.
I did.
So I'm going to use the process of elimination here. Yeah. It wasn't me.
No, not you. Keep going. Warmer.
Alec didn't know. JC, you're going to give him a...
Well, here's the thing.
You're going to let him in your Tesla after his butthole's been breached?
The thing is, I thought he said that he didn't know that someone needs to pick him up from.
No,
after I didn't.
No one needs to pick him up. They should just push him into the back alley.
Throw a couple 20s down and say, yeah.
I was told that you can't even get into an Uber afterwards. You have to have somebody pick you up.
Uber. Why does that fall to you?
No, I just said, because you didn't know, I just volunteered.
No, she volunteered.
Yeah. I won't pick you up.
Yes, I know that. I know that. That I can, on that I can rely. Yeah, no, I don't know any that. By the way, they still I don't know anything about. Well, I don't know anything about this. Thankfully,
right? Well,
How are you an adult? Like, what?
I ask myself that question often.
You don't know that.
I ask myself that too.
They do this medical procedure where you have anesthesia.
Yeah.
Someone needs to drive you home.
Well, no, but I figured it could be an Uber. But now I'm hearing that that's not even possible, which I don't understand. They don't trust you to get into an Uber.
Well, you're going to be babbling all your deep secrets. You know that, right?
Sure. Maybe that's why JC offered.
I'll be like, so tell me more.
I mean, is this happening? Because this, we should just turn a camera on this and then it'll save us a week of doing a podcast. Right. We could show that.
Well, if JC can somehow rig her car up for audio.
With camera.
Then, yeah, then maybe
we should do the podcast as you're coming out of anesthesia in the car ride.
That would be amazing.
Well, I'm still
Surprise!
In a backless gown on JC's leather seats.
White, too. They're white.
Oh, perfect. Not anymore.
Well,
creme de coco.
Oh, gross.
I wish you all the luck.
Thank you.
Wish you all the luck.
Have you ever been under anesthesia?
I have.
Is it full or twilight?
No, I mean, for surgery, not because you're a drug addict.
Jesus.
I'm not an anesthesia addict. Yes, I have been under anesthesia. I'm Jewish. I had a hernia.
Oh,
right.
I had a hernia. So
I remember it took you like 2 months to recover.
Did it? Ouch.
Yeah.
I don't recall that.
Yeah.
I could barely
walk
recovered.
Around your apartment. I mean, it was like.
I've never recovered.
It was. Like, I've never seen someone less changed by being
I know, that's exactly
recovering.
Right. How could you tell if I was recovering
I
or
couldn't,
just me?
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
2 years, 2 months.
He's shuffling around and all bent over. He seems good as new. Oh, my goodness. All right, so that's, as you're listening, possibly JC is getting explosive diarrhea on the inside of her Tesla, and it won't be my fault, and we'll talk all about it. On next
JC, I just urge you to find a way out of this as soon as possible.
I'll ask if I can take some of that wax paper from the doctor's office and we can put it over the passenger
You could
seat.
Form it into a crude diaper.
Yeah.
And it's sort of apropos of what we're discussing this week, that someone did that with a blanket and a shoe.
Yes.
And that you could just take the wax paper and craft yourself some artisan undergarments.
Artisan.
You could origami yourself.
Yes.
A diaper.
A swan diaper.
Well, so while we're talking about this stuff, let's take care of a little business. So yes, later today in the episode, we're going to be talking about Pine Barrens, the episode of Sopranos called Pine Barrens, which we've been on record here saying how much we like. And spoiler alert, my opinion has not changed.
Yeah.
Can we introduce that a little more holistically? So we have run out of guests temporarily, okay? And it's temporary. There are more guests.
Scott Grimes next week.
And we have some very interesting, exciting guests, including Scott Grimes. Coming up. But sometimes we face this. We face a lull. We have used our connections to the full extent we could use them. And sometimes no one owes you a favor. It just happens. There are these gaps in favor owing or guilting. And we are unable to get a guest. So in those, we have in the past filled in with writing advice. Now.
Right.
Yeah.
we've basically given out all the advice we can. And in addition, I can no longer in good conscience pretend that this is a career that anyone should go into.
Whoa.
There's nothing left. And I myself went out to pitch 2 weeks ago and failed so badly that, that the idea that I would be able to teach anyone anything about doing this is fraud. So coming clean on that. So in those weeks, we then have moved to sometimes discussing an appreciation for episodes we watched.
Yes.
No. Yes.
It is the 25th anniversary of The Sopranos.
Yay.
Yes.
Which is a landmark show.
Yeah.
So we decided, and see how I'm doing this more artfully. I'm providing what's called context. I know you're so concerned with what's about to happen with your butthole.
Don't care. Yeah. Yes, I am.
Yeah. That you, you know, you temporarily feel like it's enough to just go, we're done on Parham Barron, guys. These people are listening. They need a buildup, okay? It's not all about purging and exploration of your deep cavity butthole. And then, you know, digging out a piece of Topps bubble gum from 1982 that you swallow. It's the 25th anniversary of Sopranos. That's a big deal. Probably the best TV show ever.
Yep.
Pine Barrens is probably the best episode of the best TV show.
Yes.
Yes.
So we wanted to talk about it. Why? Because we couldn't get anyone
this week
to tell us a morsel of information about how to do this career. Okay. So full honest assessment, that is where we find ourselves right now. Because I'll tell you something, when I'm in a room pitching and in my head, I'm seeing my face on the Zoom, I look a billion.
No, you don't.
I look insane. I'm bald and all my hair is white. Why the fuck would anyone say, like, yes, let's select him as our commander as we foray into this uncharted territory? Like, it's an instant blocked punt.
I look a billion.
And then, as I'm pitching, literally in the back of my mind, I'm hearing the T.S. Eliot's The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock. I grow old, I grow old. I shall wear the bottoms of my trousers rolled. I have heard the mermaids singing each to each. I do not think that they will sing for me because they're not. I know they're not buying it.
Oh, that was impressive.
And besides, no one's watching fucking TV. And if they are, they're going to buy like Kevin Hart's ninth idea.
Yeah.
Like that's it. True. It's over.
That is true. God.
Is it?
It's over.
Yes!
But that, by the way, we're clinging to this life raft, though.
Sure, but the idea that I'm then giving advice to the new people, it's like the shift coming out of Chernobyl, going like, yeah, when you're in there, you know, you might want to drink some water.
A glowing review from that shift out of Chernobyl. It's well said. I and you said something before we got on about a pickaxe, which I thought was appropriate.
Yeah. So moment. I can sell you a pickaxe. I'm telling you, there's no gold in that river. And I've been here a long time. Now you may think you heard about a gold rush and you're a very lucky person and you've studied the geology, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
In shorter time than you expect, you will have a yellow beard and have lost your teeth and be a cautionary tale of someone gone insane in California. But I'll, again, give you tips on sharpening your axe tip.
Tips. Yeah, no, that's pretty scary and well said. But here's a counterpoint.
Okay.
So as you pointed out, you're a billion. I'm a billion. JC's
a billion.
Somewhere comfortably in her late 30s. So is it just that we are getting old and things are changing? Because for generations, you know, it used to be the big three networks and then it went to cable and there were suddenly 20, 30 more channels. And I think people had that same reaction at the time. Like, this is over. It's over. But we were able to find gold in that era. So now, is there another wave crashing onto the beach where they're going to be able to find gold in some new way that we can't think of? Because
different wave, different beach, not even the same skill set, does not involve long form writing at all. And like, look, now I'm going to get in the weeds a little bit here. And here's some podcast inside business. So we have booked as a guest Carrie Howley, who's this author who wrote a book called Bottoms Up and the Devil Laughs.
Yeah.
It's an incredible book. It's about data. It's about whistleblowers. Reality winner, and it's about how
John Walker Lynn.
The primacy of the small screen and the algorithmic calculations of it to entertain us have provided a catered experience that's so far different from broadcasting out, here, everyone, watch this. Instead, right. It's like, here, everyone, go into a very addictive rabbit hole of you. And now we're saying, hey, come out of the rabbit hole of you and watch this other thing. No one wants to, you know, no one wants a craft cocktail when they're doing heroin.
Right.
They're enjoying the heroin.
Yeah.
And so I think it's so much larger than just, oh, you know, it's a slightly different way of doing it. I think it's a different part of your brain reacting differently, and it has a stranglehold on people. And we're going to talk to her about this, and I'm really excited to.
Yeah.
And I realized, like, hey, that's not funny. Well, it's not all, you know, ha-ha.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, this guy's got to get his butthole looked at. She's got to drive him home. Like, that's life.
And Leslie, I learned on my first week at SNL, making funny ain't fun. That's what somebody told me.
Oh.
I was like, oh, okay.
Was it a writer?
No, of course not. It was a disgruntled sound guy.
Yeah.
In so his how would they know? 60s, because he'd been there since 1980.
Oh.
You know? So yeah. He's miserable.
So, and he didn't even like it when Trump was on, because that was a good episode.
Yeah, that was fun and funny. He did it both.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Speaking of making funny ain't fun, let's get in to Johnny Jokes.
Whoa, from Hollywood, where the colonoscopies are flowing like wine, here's Johnny.
Awesome. Yes, very uneven batch today. Let's power through it. Well, maybe
these
you heard
were found during Alex Sulkin's colonoscopy.
Yes, exactly. Covered in fecal matter that will hopefully make you giggle.
These came out during the prep.
It's part of a decades-old poo-poo platter. James Corden. Maybe you heard about this. James Corden has a new interview series, and he's set a return date. Not for the show, for some undercooked eggs.
Ooh, of course.
Undercooked eggs. Maybe you heard about this coming out of England. King Charles is out of the hospital following prostate treatment. The king says he hadn't planned on the procedure, but the doctor slid into his BMs.
Oh. That's going to happen to you on Monday.
I know. And I told Goldie the origin of that line before we started. Okay, moving on. Slid into his BMs. Republican dingbat Lauren Boebert is panicking this week after low polling numbers suggest that she is in fifth place in the upcoming Colorado congressional election. Boebert has vowed to get those polls up by taking them to Beetlejuice the musical. Paint by numbers. There we go.
Yeah.
And
still a nice painting.
Thank you. And returning to the well one too many times for one of these kinds of jokes, Spain. Spain experienced a record heat wave last week. It was so hot in Spain.
How hot was it?
It was so hot that the thermometers switched from Celsius to Iglesias. It was so hot that the Count of Monte Cristo ordered a cup of gazpacho. It was so hot, residents had a glass of lemonade out on the Portugal. Next, Johnny.
Good. Those are well done.
Those are awesome. Thank you.
Take
those
it
are, those are, that was a good week for you. Well, the NFL coaching carousel appears to have stopped, and legendary coach Bill Belichick finds himself without a job.
Oof.
This being Belichick, he's living by his new trademark slogan, "Do your nothing."
Very Goldie.
This week, a judge ordered Donald Trump to pay $83 million to E. Jean Carroll for defamation. Trump's attorney has vowed to appeal, dismissing the charges as true.
She wasn't a good attorney, that woman.
No, she wasn't.
Terrible.
Morrissey, the musician. Ooh. Morrissey,
yes,
has canceled his tour, citing exhaustion. Oh. Morrissey issued the following statement.
It was almost hard to hear it over the mic. JC, could you hear that? Did we get that? Okay, good.
I can do it. Here, I'll give you some free ones.
That's what, okay. It's the face.
I know.
Okay, that's enough. Tesla.
Thank you.
Tesla. Tesla has implanted the first ever Neuralink chip into a human being. The man instantly couldn't move from his driveway and burst into flames.
Oh, no.
And finally, the world's largest cruise ship is set to sail its maiden voyage. Royal Caribbean's Icon of the Seas. The statistics are amazing. The massive ship has over 6 water slides, 7 pools, 20 decks, holds 7,600 passengers, and is capable of producing over 1 million gallons of diarrhea per day.
That was a very funny closing joke, and you should have seen we'll release one day the behind the scenes bloopers of getting that joke down.
We are struggling today.
Yeah.
It is just inch by inch, this podcast.
The inches we need are all around us.
Oh boy.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Well, now it's time to leave that struggle behind and get into something just awesome that I know we all love. As Goldie teed up so artfully after my half-assed tee up, we are going to be talking, it's the Sopranos 25th anniversary, and we are going to be talking about what I think might be our favorite episode of the series. It's from season 3, an episode called Pine Barrens. You may remember this if you're a Sopranos fan, you certainly do. And even if you're a casual fan of the show, basically it was the one in a nutshell where Christopher and Paulie get stuck out in the woods overnight when they through a series of bizarre events. It's funny though, and I don't know, you know, I've seen this episode many times, probably half a dozen times, and I always think of it as that, like, oh, that's when Paulie and Christopher get stuck out in the woods. I forget how much other stuff was going on in this episode, which is really incredible. Because
I had the exact same reaction. Yeah.
Yeah, packed to the gills with other great storylines
and
but
moments.
Unbelievable. So let's jump into it. The show opens. It's funny because Goldie, I remember last week when we were talking about Frasier, you had a note that, you know, we all loved the pilot, the Frasier pilot. It was excellent. But you had a note that the first joke didn't land, which I had forgotten, but you're right. It didn't quite make sense. The one note I have about this Pine Barrens episode was that I thought that it was too on the nose to open with the song Gloria with a character named Gloria, who's played by Annabella Sciorra, however you say that, played Tony's Gumar, Gloria Trillo. And so the whole show opens with her. But that was weird, right?
Well, it became very weird when she turned the music down as she came on the boat and she was aware that they were playing Gloria. That just sucked.
Yes.
And then the rest of it was amazing.
It was amazing. So I don't know. I guess.
But I want to go a little bit back from that moment.
Sure.
Just into the nature of my experience, just diving back into this.
Mm-hmm.
First point I want to make is that, you know, I never really liked the credits when the show was on, and I never really actually liked the song.
Yeah. Right.
But watching them now, I get
nostalgia.
A palpable sense of excitement. And
me too.
Talk about a lost art and that people don't have time anymore. It's like to sit through that minute and a half builds your anticipation.
Totally. Wow.
And
totally.
I miss it. And that's a lost art. It's just that, like, hey, let's give people this thing they know and are almost singing along to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, to get into it's a greatest hit before the concert even starts.
I know. That's such a great point. I love that. And just when you became big enough of a Sopranos fan to know when you got up that driveway at the very end of the song and you would see names like Alan Coulter or Tim Van Patten, you're like, oh, this one's going to be good. And I also try to time the record scratch, you know, a little
do
finger
you?
In the air
awesome.
At the end. I think that's something a lot of people do.
Second point is at the end of that credit, things have changed so much and the conspicuous consumption, mm-hmm. and maybe it's fueled by social media and everyone displaying what's going on in their lives. That house doesn't even look that big or cool anymore.
No, totally.
It's not impressive.
I know.
It's just kind of like, okay, like it's big. It's not really nice.
Right.
I guess we all know too much about design and architecture and everything.
Yeah, we're old.
I know,
now.
But it does kind of, it is sort of in keeping with like what a guy like Tony and a woman
and
like
at the
Carmella
time it
would
was
think it was a castle, you know.
At the time it was. But the third point I want to make, and this is sort of the deepest point I want to make, is watching this 25 years ago, I was kind of like coming out of college and these people were adults.
Yeah.
But now I'm older than all the characters and they seem kind of like children to me.
Christopher especially. I mean,
yes. And you kind of just go like, I found like I'm not as intimidated by the idea of them because I'd be like, if I had an altercation with Tony in the supermarket, I'd be like, look here, Sonny, you know,
Sonny.
and no one would bat an eyelash. And so it's amazing how the art stays the same, but you change.
Yes.
And that was something that, you know, I didn't really feel watching Frasier as much, but I really felt watching this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great point. And I think nostalgic television, like now The Sopranos, is something you watch to try to forget about that for a little bit. I understand you noticing that. And now that you say it, I totally notice it too. But I feel like when I'm watching that show, it's putting me back to where I was a little bit. And so that's obviously part
of it. But I'm also me now. I mean, there's a double experience you're having that you don't have, because the first time you watch it, you're not saying like, I'll put myself in the mindset of when I was seven for no reason and also look at this.
Right.
That would be insane. But because you did see it at that point, you're comparing the experiences, you know, similarly to you go to Disneyland as a child and then you go as an adult, or you do anything as a kid and you go, I want to bring my kids here and see it through their eyes and also be the parent. That I was the parent now.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
That's a little depressing. but so let's get back into this first scene here. So something great that they set up right away that goes on through the whole episode, which almost plays as, I mean, we can, I'm sure we'll talk about this as we talk about it, but this show was almost as funny as the Frasier pilot. Like, there's so much comedy in the Sopranos in general, and in this episode in particular, that I think it could not only be on a list of the greatest, you know, drama 1 hours of all time, but it could very well so be funny. On a list of like the greatest comedies. It had so much funny shit in it. So one of the funny things, at least to me, that they set up in the beginning. So Gloria, Tony's mistress, she is so...
I love Gloria Trillo.
Oh, yes. You do? It's, I mean, you physically, she's attractive.
I just think she's an awesome incredible. Character. She's great.
It's a great character, but part of the greatness is she makes you feel so unsettled. Like, she's so volatile. And it comes to the fore right away when she shows up on Tony's boat, the Stugatz, before he gets there. And the phone rings. She picks it up because she's Gloria Trillo. And it's Tony's old mistress, the Russian mistress, who's calling looking for Tony. And then she does this lame, very funny pretending that her name is Mrs. Washington, which is great. It just sounds like if a Russian could make up a fake American name, that's what it's going to be. Mrs. Washington from Little Anthony's school. And so that's as Tony's walking in. Tony takes the phone, pretends that it's the woman from school, dismisses his old mistress. And then there's this awkward moment where they're just kind of sitting there. It's clear Gloria's been away for a while and Tony's not like that affectionate with her. And then after a beat, Tony, in a real watershed moment for him, is like, you know what? That wasn't a woman from my kid's school. That was actually an old girlfriend, which is a great thing for him to do in the moment. Like he's trying to be honest and he is being honest. And she immediately shits all over that and throws his present out the window and storms off the boat. And I thought that was a very relatable moment just in life. Like, you try to do the right thing and you still get shit on. But it sort of starts the episode of like, okay, Tony's going to be going through it this episode. And
her rationale for being angry was also valid. And that's what I like about this
show. Oh, yeah. No, they're smartly written.
Is that... You just go like, these are the intractable problems that put us all in a form of counseling that you just go. And the episode does end on this point, which is just, hey, like, I'm doing my best here. Why can nothing work out?
Yes.
Well, also, he's been working on trying to be more honest in his relationships, but not the relationship with her. So she doesn't even have any clue about the work he's been putting in. She's just experiencing this, well, why did you lie to me in the first place? Like, she's not there for the journey he's been on. So,
well, that's painfully clear. Yeah. Yes.
Well, it's funny because this episode is ultimately, you know, in all its complexity and how good it is, what impressed me most was it's really about such small things. It's really about, like, good help is hard to find.
Yeah, right.
Like, yes. Everyone at my job is an idiot. It's kind of The Office in a way.
Yeah.
Where these two guys have a very simple task to execute.
That's true.
They get in each other's way. They're in trying to fix their own mess. They create an even bigger mess to the point where then their lives have to be saved like their children who swam out too far.
Yes, right? Literally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then... In the other story, it's basically, I just told you the truth and I'm trying to be, and you just can't accept it. Like, you can't accept it. You can't accept me. And then the other story is kind of like, and my family's a pain in the butt.
Yeah. Yep.
It's so
very
simple.
Simple themes. And something, Goldie, relatable. That I'm sure you found hilarious as I did was that when we first see Pauly in this episode, who plays a huge role in the episode, he's getting a manicure.
Yes.
And he's saying, that's like, let's do the satin finish today or something like that. And it's just, it knowing what we know about the episode,
yep,
it is so much funnier to know that, like, that was his day. Pauly is a very vain guy. He's like, yes, his hair is always just so, and he likes to dress nicely, and he's getting a manicure, and this one phone call, like, ruins his entire day and almost his whole life. It was great. Right. It was,
yeah, and it's one of those things you can only appreciate on a rewatch, because as if you're just watching it for the first time,
you wouldn't remember.
Like, well, we got to put him somewhere, and right, he seems like he would get his nails done. That's kind of a funny thing in isolation, right. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely a setup. It's traditional, like almost Aristotelian storytelling. Yeah, you build up the person as one thing, so that their fall is more impactful when you reveal that it's all a veneer.
Yeah, right. Literally.
And so that Satin and veneer. Christopher not having eaten. Yes. Which at the time seems brilliant, like such a minor thing, but
yes.
When you talk about storytelling and story building, like, those are very simple things. Again, it's sometimes I think we try to make these Baroque and Corinthian structures, and we're trying to outsmart the audience, and you just kind of go, you don't need to do that. But what I think the reason we responded
Baroque
to this episode so much is it's such a departure in season three from the expectation of a typical great Sopranos episode, which is just, there's a rival or a crime, or they're pulling off a heist or something
in the house,
that our characters are getting in mob trouble, that all of a sudden they're in the woods. And that is just, a brilliant thing that you can only pull off when you're successful and people care about the characters in their normal lives.
Yep.
That you can then move them into a different environment location, and say, like, look at how they respond. It's not even in fish out of water. It's like they drive, 2-3 hours away, and it's like they're in Ecuador.
Yeah. And also, because you bring that up, I think it's a good moment to say something fairly obvious, but worth saying, that were this a Hollywood show or an LA show, they would be going out and creating a fake cold environment. Like, it was so awesome to have them in real snow and really see their breath, and the Russian guy loving the cold. God, that was awesome. Like, the cold and the snow itself, I was so happy that show was made the way it was made, because it really allowed for like a really organic weather moment like that.
And I want to just point out, there is, if you go to theringer.com, there's a really great compilation of interviews about the Pine Barrens episode that I read a couple months ago. But one of the things I learned from reading that was that, they had booked some kind of park out in New York to film. It was actually filmed in New York and not South Jersey.
Right.
And that it just happened to snow. And that was at first viewed as a production hurdle, like, oh shit, we got to film in this, but it was their persevering through it that made it so classic. Because you're right, if it hadn't been snowy, I don't know that it would live in our memories as much.
Yeah.
And have looked as, just the way it looks of these guys in their stupid Wilson Leathers jackets.
Yes.
So unprepared in this harsh environment that, there's a story when we graduated college. And it was maybe in 1997 or something. And it led the Boston Globe for weeks. And it was these two kids had graduated college. They were our age. And they were driving across the country. And they got out in Death Valley to look around. And they somehow got turned around from their car. And they were lost for a week or 10 days. And they had no food, no water. And what came out in court was that one of the kids who survived said that the other kid begged him to kill him. Because he was suffering so badly. So he did.
Oh my God.
And then it just turned out they were like a quarter mile from the highway the entire time.
Oh.
And,
so
and they
tragic.
Didn't know, did this guy just murder the other guy, or was this a true story? But
wow,
this was a brilliant dramatization of how you can be so close to comfort and so close to where you're from and what you know. And you can unravel within the course of 20 seconds.
Yes.
They did that so well. They showed so effectively the Yeah, the unraveling of both Chris and Pauly was awesome to watch, and they both unraveled in a way that was consistent to their characters.
Them, yes,
like Pauly is despicable in this episode. Yes. Like you love Pauly from the show, I love him, but he was at his absolute worst in this episode. It's so many turns, and it was fun to watch. I mean. We can sort of mention, I guess, briefly, like another thing adding to Tony's stress level in this episode is that he and Carmela at this point in the series are in couples counseling with Dr. Melfi. So you watch that uncomfortable exchange. And again, Goldie, as you pointed out, like Tony's trying to do the right thing in there. Like, you know, Carmela, you know, is chastising Tony about some way he's acted in the past. And you watch Tony like almost rise to anger, then kind of settle down and he eats it. He just eats it, you know, and then the doctor actually points out, wow, I'm so happy you two can communicate about this without rancor. And you're watching Tony like he's barely holding on.
And then sort of brilliantly, they have this thing going on with Meadow, which is her.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Becoming her mother or not becoming her mother.
Yes.
Yep.
You know, is a C story.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
And I had remembered that so well because there's just a landmark joke in there in the first scene when they're trying to establish how ill-suited these characters are for each other. They're playing Scrabble.
Yeah.
Yes, and her boyfriend, Jackie Jr., she's playing all words like oblique.
And
high value words. And he's playing ass, poo, cat. Which is
it was
great.
Such a memorable and totally well written and honest moment when he writes, when he puts down ass on the board and then he clumsily turns to her and she's sick. Like she's clearly sick. And he's like, as in, do you want to give me some? And she's like, Jackie, I'm sick. He's like, I'm just kidding. Unless of course you want to. It's such a guy thing.
It's so real.
It was so dumb guy-ish that whole exchange.
That was a good Jackie Jr.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. Thanks. I don't know where else you can use it. But.
Yeah. Oh, everybody's dying for that impersonation these days. But it was also good because you can see Jackie Jr. literally looking at his watch surreptitiously in that moment. And he's thinking like, there's no way I'm going to sleep in this twin bed with this
surreptitiously
girl.
Looking at his giant watch.
Yes.
Yes.
It was a very large watch. And so then after we've set up the sort of multiple stories that are going to be going on this episode, we get into the meat of it where Pauly and Christopher go over to the Russian's house. They have to collect money for Silvio, which they also insert in a very funny way. Silvio's got the sniffles, and so he doesn't have to go collect it. Pauly's already pissed that he has to go there and pick up this $5,000 from this sort of large, drunk Russian man.
This is an internal Family Guy joke. I'll say that Silvio's basically been sent into the Zoom blue sky room for the day.
You were there yesterday. You were, oh, that's so funny. Good to know how everyone looks at that. So Christopher and Pauly show up to collect this money. And right away, God, Pauly is being such an asshole. Something that I noticed in this episode, even more than other episodes, he was using his cackle like so many times. Like he'd say the dumb, you know, he's like, hey, you know, time to get up and maybe the other 30 people that are living here. Like he's operating on the oldest information too about Russia. He's bringing up the Rasputin and the Cuban Missile Crisis. Like all his references are so old. There was a great line. Maybe we'll talk about it, but it's much later when they're out in the snow and Pauly's crazed and he says, yeah, well, I should have fucked Dale Evans, but I didn't. And I had to look up who Dale Evans was. And it was Roy Rogers' cowboy wife. And like there are these pictures of her like holding up two guns and like she's kind of pretty, but it's just hilarious that Pauly wanted to fuck her.
Oh, God. I mean, first, the Russian guy casting is unbelievable. That
unbelievable.
Amazing. And his size, his physicality. Yes. But something throughout the series is Pauly's petty jealousy and his materialism.
Yes.
That he sees that this guy has a nice stereo.
Yes.
And the And it just really bothers him that anyone has anything nicer than him. Yeah. Because he does say, you know, he makes an errant comment about Tony sitting there in his big house. I forget if it's when they're in the van. It's later in the episode. He clearly just feels like he deserves more. He's made millions for Tony. And so you kind of put two and two together, like, the whole reason he teed off was this lowlife Russian guy who's in a different operation has nice things.
Yes.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah. That's smart. And by the way, this sets up one of your most quoted lines of the series, which is the moment that sparks the whole episode. So give it to us.
Universal remote put in docking station.
What?
Put universal remote in docking station.
Look at this guy handing out orders. And then, of course,
I would say that, I mean, because in my life, like, that is just shorthand for, can you please do this one simple fucking thing? Because you've gotten what you wanted, which was the $5,000.
Yep.
You're touching something you have no business touching.
Yeah.
Our business is done.
Yeah. Yes.
You came for something. I gave it to you. And I've been kind of, if not cool, fine about it.
Cooperative.
So please just put Universal Remote back in docking station.
Oh, my God.
And also, I'm not afraid of you. Kind of thing,
I'm gonna tell you what to do, asshole. And and he was justified in that moment, telling him that. And of course, Polly takes it too far, and instead he does a very fake, whoops, and drops the remote.
And even
shatters.
Christopher goes, "Polly, come on,
Polly, yeah." So they clock a lot of good Christopher reactions in this episode.
Yeah,
like there was a scene later where
Polly is cringe, to use like my daughter's phrase.
Yes, yes.
There's a moment a little later where they're on the phone to Tony, and Polly says, like, the guy cold, sucker punched us, and they show Christopher giving a look like, that is not what happened at all, you fucking liar. But so anyway, Polly drops the remote. The Russian guy doesn't even attack. He just goes to stand up. Polly pushes him down and smashes a glass bottle into his head.
Then
it's chaos. And so it's good, though, because as we talked about, like, the I haven't eaten yet, or Polly's just having getting his nails done day. In this moment, Christopher backs up Polly, jumps on the Russian guy, and the Russian guy's so big, he's like carrying Christopher around. And you hear Christopher while that's happening, he goes, "Polly, where are you?"
I love that line. Has stuck with me for 25 years.
I know, me too. And it enhances the theme of the show, which is sort of like, Polly's just a total, just not, he's absent, and he's not doing it. Christopher has his back. Polly does not have Christopher's back.
Yeah.
So they
Polly who caused the whole situation.
Who caused it all. Who caused the chaos. And so they subdue this Russian guy. Polly chokes him with a giant 90s, apartment lamp that everyone had.
Right.
Chokes him and they think he's dead. And so they, I love it. They wrap him up in a carpet. He's like the biggest guy. They bring him out on a dolly. And put him in the back of Polly's car. So this has gone sideways, and they call Tony to break the bad news. And this starts, because Goldie, I know you've gone on record many times as saying that cell phones have kind of ruined TV comedies, and it makes a lot
but
of...
But not here. Here it enhances it.
No, yeah, I was going to say, they handled it so smartly in here, because they acknowledged that, yes, cell phones are here, so we can communicate, but they made cell phone communication such an honest pain in the ass.
Which they still are, by the way. It's really smartphones have ruined comedy, not cell phones,
right?
To be technical. But ultimately, also, this is a show about parenting. It really is. Like, Tony's just everyone's friggin' dad. Like, he's his wife's dad. He's his kid's dad. He's his employee's dad.
Yep.
And he's not a very good dad, and he doesn't know how to do it.
Right. Yep.
And he's a lost child because of his mom. And so it's like the fact that they create this situation, they call him. It's like, I don't know what the situation is.
Right.
I don't know where you are or what you did. So how would I know what you're supposed to do?
Right.
Exactly.
But even through that, he's pretty explicit. Like, if this guy's dead, get rid of him so yes. we never see him again. Like, he's pretty right. clear about that. But you start to get the first cell phone crackle, and they can't yep. hear each other. And Tony, I mean, some of his best acting is getting angry at that cell phone because it felt so real.
Well, yes. so that's real. The scene where he's at Gloria's, right?
Well, there's one scene at where he's on his way to a car.
Okay.
And then there's, yeah, but then there's a scene at Gloria's. Yeah.
The one where he's at Gloria's and the call comes in and he just goes in the bathroom and then he flushes the toilet.
Yeah.
Now, I just ask you, what is worse? That someone you're having sex with hears you yelling, or someone you're having sex with hears you do something in the bathroom that you have to flush twice? I would rather they hear me yelling.
You would rather That's them funny. Hear you ordering a hit, right? Or, you know, dispose of this dead body than thinking you
I
had
took a two
shit,
flusher.
Shit so gnarly.
Yes.
That you needed two flushes. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That makes sense. So then, you know, we talked about these things, the not eating. That's Chris mentions it as they're at the gas station on their way down. There was another weird little great moment at the gas station.
I know what you're going to say.
When the other family walks by.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like they're in the middle of this weird shitstorm of their own creation. And then this family walks by and you see Polly's facial expression totally change. It's like, how you doing? And then it changes yeah. right back. I love that. It's just, it underscored
the fact.
It underscored the fact that these people are living in the real world. And that was something that I wrote down later. That
but he's also just a dunce. Like, yeah. just, it's like every if you're trying to look not suspicious, you didn't pull it off. Like,
yes, exactly. Like,
you know, Brad Walsh, who we had on the other week, said an expression to me that stuck in my head, which is like he had been on a show where he was doing very well, and then he went to a different show, and he said he wasn't doing as well, and he said, "I realize my karate doesn't work in this dojo," and it's like. Whatever Polly is doing may have worked in the 60s or whenever,
right.
but Polly's karate does not work in the dojo
yeah,
anymore.
Of the 2000s. Yes,
no.
that's a running theme of the series, how he's sort of like the one left behind somehow. Oh. I found it, at this point I wrote down, it's so hard to talk about the writing of this show because it doesn't feel like writing. You know, there were just never, when you watch Frasier, for instance, you clock many jokes and you say, oh, that is such a great joke. That is so well written. The Sopranos feel so real mm-hmm. that sometimes if you watch it, if you go into it saying like, oh, I want to talk about the writing and the writing, it's very hard. And you almost have to just focus more on the structure of what happens.
Yeah, I think, and I attribute it not, the writing is great and, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's really the casting and the directing. That,
yeah, totally.
Because this could just be a bad network drama that was pretty forgettable, even with some of the great writing. But it's like Steve Buscemi, who directed yes. this, and I think this was so the cool. first episode that he directed.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, just clearly has this indie film background of making small, believable things in the midst of these wild, grandiose plot turns.
Yeah.
Because you're right, for it doesn't feel like writing, but it just doesn't feel like a movie even. It just feels like you're standing on in the set watching this.
Yes.
Yeah.
God, it was so good. So then the plot is here the plot's moving forward. They leave the gas station, they decide they're going to go to the Pine Barrens, which is an area in South Jersey where they can dispose of the body. And the way Polly sets it up, like, it'll be great, you know, they'll dump the body and like we're 20 minutes from Atlantic City, we'll get mm-hmm. a steak at Morton's. It all just sounded like it was so perfect. And you're aware that there's a Roy Rogers just off camera that Christopher just wants to go and chow.
Sorry.
And he's like, nope, we're not doing that, we're gonna have this great night. So they head down to Pine Barrens. They open the trunk of the car when they park in a spot next to the woods. And lo and behold, this Russian guy is still alive. You know, he pops up, and that's when Pauly says, like, you know, like, or I think he says it later, like, Rasputin, this guy. But so he pops up, and they're kind of poking fun at him because he's tied up. He can't do anything. And they're like, well, we're going to lead him out into the woods.
But again, I want to stop you here because this is them being bad employees. This is lazy work. Like, you just shoot him in the head then.
Yes.
And you dig the hole yourself. Like, it really was them not wanting to put in 20 minutes of manual labor, which is their job.
Right.
Leads to them totally screwing up their job.
Yes, because as you say, they get out to the middle of the woods. And we got to highlight again, as you said before, the casting of this Russian guy, who I never saw before or since, was amazing. Because he's, as they're walking him out into the woods, he's barefoot in a t-shirt and pajama bottoms. And it's walking through the walking through the snow, pounding his chest, saying, this isn't cold for a Russian. You Americans are bullshit. And it was so great. And you really did in that moment, like, you fear Russian people watching that. Mm-hmm. You're just like, fuck, I believe this guy. Like, totally. I believe that Russians would totally fucking outsmart us in the cold. And that's, of course, what ends up happening. Because
but it's also the idea, like, let's give this angry, huge person a shovel.
Yes. Well, that's Paulie's laziness. We're like, we're going to fucking dig the hole. You know, even Christopher questions him. He's like, Paulie, what are you doing? Why are you cutting his restraints? And he's like, I'm not fucking digging the hole. You're digging it. And
oh my God.
Oh, and then the Russians plan. He waits just for the right moment when they're both distracted talking about something. Whaps Chris on the forehead and it gives him a great gnarly bruise that he has for the rest of the episode. And like hits Paulie in the nuts with the butt of the shovel, and he's like a Ted Jessup in his prime. He's off sprinting through the woods, and they're shooting him. It's great too. Like the guns sounded so good and looked so great in this episode because they seemed almost like cap guns, and you just knew like, oh, they're gonna keep missing him, keep missing him, and then somehow with his last shot, Paulie is able to clearly hit this Russian guy in the head from far away. And you see the Russian guy like blood spray out of his head and he falls down. But then after a second, you see him kind of lumber to his feet and takes off. And that's when Paulie says like Rasputin, this guy. So that is such an interesting detail that I don't know who came up with that or who thought of that. But that is, you talk about lines that have stuck with you for 25 years. That has stuck with me because it wasn't just that he ran and got away. It was they shot him in the head and he still got mysteriously got away in a way that leads your mind in a thousand directions. Like, did he just die like somewhere?
I mean, one of the great disappointments of the series to me was that, you know, I think we were all hoping for his return at some point because we loved him so much. And, you know,
a spinoff.
We wanted him to come back and he just never did. Unfortunately,
I know. I almost respect it now later where it was just like, it's a great, I mean, listen, the way they ended the series, is it any surprise that they left us with this sort of open question of what happened to Valerie?
But I mean, you could do a movie, you know how like they're always doing in the Sopranos universe. Yeah. I mean, if you were doing that, like that would be in my mind, the first thing to try.
I wonder what that guy's doing today. I hope he's alive and doing well because he was so good in this. And so now we talked earlier about not only is this a fucking fantastic drama, but it's such a great comedy. They had so many great little lines here where just
it becomes Waiting for Godot, right? I mean, it's like these guys need to be saved. Where are they? When are they coming? And
Well, then it became like Blair Witch meets Waiting for Godot. Like we're totally lost in the fucking woods and there's possibly this monster out there that we can't kill. But at one point, and I forget, I should have written down what Chris's line was that provokes it. Something about being hungry still. And Paulie turns to him and goes, hey, stop being cunty. And I was just like, God, what a perfect Paulie line. And JC, I know that's one of your favorite.
I just loved
favorite words. What a line. And so then there's this another phone call, which they have several with Tony. And it keeps cutting in and out because of the reception where they are. And Tony's getting so frustrated. And this is just after Tony has gone into his meeting with the head Russian boss. And I love the head Russian boss, too, because he seemed so nice and like so normal compared to what's going on with Tony and his world. But there was that element the first time you watched it of danger. Like, does he know? Is he going to ambush and shoot Tony? Like, you never felt safe. But watching it this time, we know obviously he didn't know about it, and it was just a normal meeting. But Tony learns more about this Russian guy who they have with them out in the woods, this tall Russian guy. He learns that he killed single-handedly like 16 Chechen rebels, that he was a member of the Interior Ministry. So, of course, in a true game of telephone, as Tony's telling this to Paulie, it gets fucked up by Paulie on his end. So he's, you know, Paulie's saying he killed, you know, 16 Czechoslovakians. The guy's an interior decorator. And then Chris has that great line, Goldie.
Well, then why does the apartment look like shit?
Yeah. He goes, he is. His house looked like shit. It was so great.
I mean, it was. I mean, that part is like, you know, it's like talking to your mom, you know. It's the holdovers, the nobodies.
The nobodies. Yeah.
It's that.
Yeah.
So frustrating.
It was so great.
Hilarious.
And so then there's this moment where they're trudging through the snow, Paulie and Christopher, and Paulie loses his shoe when he falls down a hill, which becomes, you know, his big complaint for the rest of the episode moving forward, which is hilarious because you can imagine how fucking freezing it would be with no shoe in the snow.
And dress socks.
And dress socks, right. He doesn't even have the benefit of a champion sock. So, but something that also now, of course, because we've all watched the series, that shoe moment comes back in a very funny way the next season when they're at the Bing and Paulie and Christopher are reminiscing about this Pine Barrens episode and this fucking nightmare. And Christopher says at some point, like, and then Paulie lost his shoe, and Vito, Spadafore, standing right there, he grabs Paulie so giddily by the shoulder, and he goes, "You lost your shoe? You didn't mention that." And that's when Paulie gets so angry, and he and Christopher almost come to blows. And I love that, because that is a perfect thing. It's like a humiliating thing for Paulie to have lost his shoe.
Yeah.
You understand that even better, like a year
later. I mean, it just, you know, because the first time I watched it, I didn't have kids. And now that I do, you just go like, this is a child. Like, this is,
he's such a child.
This is what happens is you just go, they create an unforeseen problem that becomes your problem instantly.
Yep.
Yes.
And they have no ability to solve something that was preventable.
Yep.
But now you can't do something for them.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, they can't implement. They have a problem implementing your advice, too.
And then they're kind of mad at you. And,
right.
All on you now. But you're like, you lost your shoe.
Oh, yes. God. So in the background, you know, in the B story, while these guys are out in the woods in the A story, the B story is Tony and his mistress. So Tony sets up a dinner with Gloria, and he's going to get there at 9. And so you see a very, oh God, it was so painful to watch. You see Tony's dinner at home with his son, AJ, and Carmela, and he's not really eating. And you see Carmela clock this and just like, what's the matter? You're not hungry? Like, well, late lunch. And you know, in that moment that she probably knows like, oh, you've got some other fucking thing coming up.
Well, so, the funny element of this Gloria dinner to me was she builds it up. She says, "You like London broil?" And it's like, no one likes London broil. That is a bad cut of meat that if you're having someone over, it's got to be a New York strip at least. You know, maybe a filet mignon, or you know, you like ribeye. You go, you like London broil? It's like, actually, I don't. I mean, I'd rather have hamburgers if we're doing London broil.
It's true. That's though, funny. But like, I find that to be a fun consistency within the show is like, the things they think are classy are basically like what 1970s people would find classy. So it's
totally.
Like, you know, if somebody had a fondue pot, that would be the height of classiness in their world. But yeah, so he set up this dinner. He's stuck at his own dinner. He's just about to leave his dinner when his mother-in-law and father-in-law come in. And they've got the dour faces, and they're saying, "We just came back from the doctor. He's got glaucoma." And so at that moment, Tony gets another call from Paulie and Christopher. It's equally as agonizing. They can't hear each other. There's a funny echo now that they're putting into the phone calls. It's really warping the whole thing. Tony's cursing in the phone, and the mother-in-law is like, "Is that language really necessary?" So then finally, Tony hangs up, and it's like, okay, he's going to go over to his mistress's for this dinner. And Carmela looks at Tony. He's like, "You're gonna stay for coffee, right?" There's a pause, and then Carmela says, "My father has glaucoma." And
yeah,
he has to sit down.
This is such a generational thing that because something upsetting has happened, we now need to just sort of wallow in it pointlessly, right. And that anyone who's on the hemisphere of it, if you're in like a Saturn's ring of it and you're orbiting it, you need to be pulled gravitationally in and also be in this vague state of collective mourning or anger at for no reason. Like you go, he's gonna have glaucoma if I sit here and have
or
this
not.
Right. Or not.
I can talk to him about the glaucoma the rest of his life because he will have it. So right. I can, you know, make appropriate emotions at a later moment. But this, you know, it's that thing of, you know, it's been a conflict throughout all of dramatic history, which is like, can you see I have to work?
Yes. Right. Yeah. Oh, totally. And also, as you say, like there will forever be this cloud that hangs over you if you weren't there in that moment, that ground zero moment of glaucoma. It doesn't matter how supportive you are in the years going
after
forward.
That,
it's like you left that first night. You didn't stay for coffee.
Yeah. You know, I had glaucoma and he went off. And it's like, well, sure, you had glaucoma no matter what he did. And if he wasn't there when you got there, you wouldn't have known to be angry.
Right.
About him not respecting your glaucoma.
Exactly.
But this is like the entire time I was growing up, this is the type of conflict that was just omnipresent in our lives.
Yes.
It was talked about, you know, when the people weren't there. It's like that was such a great moment for me.
Because so great.
It rang so true to like what.
Yeah, what life is.
A documentary about like what life was like in the 80s.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's, again, it just didn't feel like writing. It just felt like a fucking moment that we got to witness. So Paulie and Christopher are back in the woods. They come upon a van and they're excited because they've been it's nighttime now. It's pitch black. They find an abandoned van that they hop in, and it looked so freezing in the van. Like you could feel how cold it was. You could hear the creak of that metal, and you just knew how cold it was in there. But they're you know, maybe 2 degrees warmer, and they're in shelter, and they're sort of shivering in place. Christopher finds the old fast food bag with the ketchup packets, which I love. So they're like sucking down.
But even when they were getting into the van, when Paulie just shoves him out of the way to get into the van first. Yeah.
He wanted to be in the driver's seat.
Also with the ketchup packets, him, and it's such an infuriating thing that boomers do, is he says, mix the ketchup with the relish. Like even in this small moment, he has to have some dumb fucking advice that you're doing it wrong. And he's found some way of doing it that you're not doing. It's like, I have a ketchup packet. If I want to mix them, I'll mix them. But you don't know something that I don't know. You're not in charge because you have an idea that's lateral to what we're doing.
Right.
Like, don't give me a suggestion. Like, the pathological need to give a content person suggestions is something so true of that era.
Oh, God.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah. Like you're, for years, you're going to be remembering, oh, and then Paulie made the great suggestion of adding relish to the ketchup packet, and our evening was changed. And so this is also a moment where there's another phone call between Paulie and Tony that's cut up and, you know, hard to hear. But one of the things that you definitely do hear is Paulie trying to pin this whole thing on Christopher, which is so great. Like he's already seeing, you know, to Paulie's credit, at least one step ahead where he's going to have to answer for this to Tony at some point. So he's laying the groundwork of like your nephew, like he doesn't think before he acts. That's all I'm going to say. Like, so great. And of course, you realize later that Christopher heard all that, which is also a nice detail. So they're stuck in the van. We get to Tony arriving late to Gloria's for this date. And Gloria is her usual sort of like unhinged self. Very angry. The dinner's fucking ruined, which I love. Like, you know, she says the way they say ruined.
Ruined.
In that part of the world. But Tony stays. They clearly have sex. They're about to have dinner when Tony gets another call from Polly and it's the last straw. Polly's like, you know, what's happening out here? We're fucking dying out here. Well, what do you want me to do? I want you to come get us. You know, like you were saying,
like
Goldie,
a child.
Like it's a kid who needs their parents to come pick them up. And so this leads to Tony clearly, you know, very agitated, taking off his daishiki or whatever she brought him from Morocco. And he's like, I gotta go. And she flips out and throws the London broil at his neck.
Big piece too.
And this take was so good from James Gandolfini. I mean, listen, we don't need to sit here and say how great James Gandolfini was as Tony Soprano. But in this moment, you felt so scared
of what was
going to happen after he got hit with that stake, and the way he turns and looks at her, and you can see even on her face, like she's scared, like she realizes she went too far. And then his anger turns into a little smile and he heads out. And that was, I love the way that they handled that moment, especially given what was coming in the future with that, his relationship.
The stake hit wasn't quite as satisfying as I remembered. Like, I remember a wet, juicy stake hitting him in the head, and it was more of a dry stake hitting him in the collar and the neck.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Right?
Wherever it hit him, you don't want to hit Tony Soprano with any piece of food.
Right.
So this sends him over to Uncle Junior's house.
And then I see a character that looks like me now.
Uncle Junior.
No.
Yeah. I'm up all night with the chemo anyway.
Yeah.
And it was funny that Uncle Junior. Oh yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Dominic. I just put on my glasses and now I'm Uncle Junior.
Hey, by the way, he's still alive. So yeah, maybe that speaks well for you. He's kicking at 94. I looked him up.
Awesome.
Yeah, we love him, Dominic Chianese, and he's a good singer too. I think that was like his thing before acting. So he goes over to Junior's. He smells like steak. Junior clocks it, which is a funny moment too. And then Tony doesn't even get into it. And then Bobby Bacala, who's probably like the one truly nice character in the whole series, comes over and he's going to help. He's clearly been enlisted by Junior in the middle of the night to go help Tony find these guys out in the woods. So he shows up in full hunting gear with the reflective vest and the camouflage. And Tony can't stop laughing. And Bobby's reaction is very funny. Just like,
well, the interesting thing I read in that Ringer article that I referenced earlier was that apparently for that take, you know, because you do what's called your coverage when the camera's just on you for a single shot, that he whipped out a giant dildo to make James Gandolfini laugh.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, because you do notice his giggling. It does seem like pretty sincere in that moment.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a fun behind the scenes fact. So Bobby and Tony are now off to go rescue Paul.
And also Bobby's the one person who knows what they're doing and he gets contempt.
Yeah, right. Exactly. He gets shit on.
He's prepared.
I got my limits too, Junior, which is a great, like a perfect Bobby line. You love Bobby. You just want to give him a hug every time you see him. Watching Janice manipulate him that season.
God.
Oh, God, it makes you so
mad.
But so then we go out to Paulie and Christopher in the van. And you see Christopher kind of look over at Paulie, who's clearly eating a Tic Tac. And Christopher's like, you got Tic Tacs? He's like, I had them in my coat. I forgot I had them. He's like, well, give me some. He's like, this is the last one. It was like a great, great Paulie moment. So Christopher's like going to forage for berries. He goes out of the van. And then there's this hilarious moment where Christopher kind of circles around the van and starts to take a leak by Paulie's side of the van. Now, given Paulie's window's closed, like it's not like it's open air. But Paulie gets so mad about this show of disrespect, like piss by your own window. I don't want to smell your piss. So that escalates into Paulie coming out. Christopher saying, I heard you on the phone trying to pin this on me. Christopher has Paulie at gunpoint. And then he's sort of like, you know, Paulie's cornered and like a little weasel. He's just like, you know, we've been through so too much together, kid. And Christopher starts laughing and it all kind of diffuses. But so then.
But is that where he has the great line of, you know, he's like, I'm your captain. And he's reminding him he's his boss. And he's like, right now we're just two assholes in the woods.
Yeah. We're just two assholes lost in the woods.
Yeah, that's perfect.
That was great. That really summed it up. So then Tony and Bobby get out there. It's still dark. They wait till it's light. They start to go looking for him. Christopher and Polly have, you know, are also ventured out in the light, and that's where Polly puts the piece of van carpet around his foot to try and fashion a shoe. Yes. And you heard what Christopher said to him when he did that?
I don't recall.
As he's putting the carpet on his foot, Christopher looks over and goes, "Bruno Magli over here."
Oh yeah.
Which is yeah, great. Yeah. I love it. Such a great reference to the OJ shoe and that time in history. So of course the carpet shoe doesn't work. It comes off, and Polly gets so pissed that he throws it and then shoots at it, which then alerts Tony and Bobby to where they are. They fire a shot into the air and they find each other.
But it was like the idiot Christian the Lion reunion of them. It's like, Tony, Chrissy. Yeah.
And they're like, thank God.
And they're like hugging and you're just like,
well, actually, I thought that was kind of nice in a way, because as pissed as Tony was the whole episode, rightfully, you know, there was so much shit going on for him. He was legitimately relieved to find them both alive. And so it was like a moment of humanity for him, which is then hilariously cut when they get into Tony's Suburban and they're getting ready to go. And Tony lays this out for Polly, you know, just summing up the whole episode, just like, dude, what do you think? Should we stay and look for this guy? And Polly's like, of course, is like, nah, fuck it. And Tony's like, okay, but if this guy comes back, you're going to take the heat. You're going to deal with the Russians. And it was so clear what you were saying, Goldie, good help is hard to find. Like, this is the moment where the boss is like, you fucked up. Like, this is your fuck up.
You think this is good enough? And that always means this isn't good enough.
Right.
But
right.
Tell me right now that you also agree, and we're in the same common culture here of achievement, that we shoot for better. And then she just goes like, nope.
No, let's get out of here. And there's a moment right at the end where their relationship going forward is perfectly displayed, where Tony's driving, looks in the rearview mirror, and tells Polly, you got mayonnaise on your chin. Polly says, what? He goes, mayonnaise. He's so angry. And they show, again, they show Christopher kind of laughing, like looking at him and smiling. And then Polly sadly wiping it off and then looking out the window with that mean mug as the opera music played. And it was just like,
his hair's all messed up.
He knew in that moment, like, I'm in Tony's fucking doghouse. Like, you know, this sucks. And it's funny because you mentioned at the beginning of the show about
it was like Joe Coy's writers on the, right, on the Golden Globes.
Good callback. But you mentioned earlier in the episode how the episode actually ends with a very short scene in therapy where Tony asks the questions like, you know, I'm trying to do the right thing. Like, why does everything have to be such a fucking slog? I kind of thought the episode should have ended on Polly's face staring out the window. But I mean, that's just,
I don't know. I really, you know, again, watching this thing later in life, I really related to that in a way that I never did before.
Yeah.
Just go, like, as someone who feels like they're really doing their best, and then it's just every day is a struggle sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, trying to get your kids on track and, you know, with the show business and writing and pitching and everything. And you just go like, everything I've done to this moment means nothing. It's a blank slate all the friggin' time. Like, look at all the stuff he did to please people in that episode. I mean, he's a venal character and not someone to look up to, but he did try to do something for everyone and give everyone the amount of time they did. And all that resulted in for him was having to take care of all this stuff.
Yeah.
Yep.
From his perspective, you know, I'm sure Carmella would tell a different story.
Yes. True. Absolutely. She would. Well, so anyway, then the episode ends there, and it only confirmed what I felt about the episode.
And we knew at the time too, how good it was.
Yes.
Like, it wasn't like, oh, over time that became built in our minds. Like, you knew when that ended, you were like, I just saw something incredible.
Totally right. So again, Steve Buscemi And I think Tim Van Patten was one of the writers on this. There was another writer whose name I'm forgetting, so forgive me. But boy, congratulations. This was so fun to watch again. And is just simply, I think it's the best hour of television I've ever seen. And I loved watching it again.
Yeah, it was
I
great.
I agree.
Yeah, it was great.
Oh, that was loved fun. It. That was fun. Fun talking to you folks about it. Now let's get into a portion of the show we like to call Top 5.
Top 5.
Oh, beautiful. JC, this was your topic, so tell them what the hut topic is this week.
The hut topic is top 5 candies.
Ooh, yeah.
Okay.
Delish.
Delish. So my number 5 is sort of an old school candy bar, I think. It's the Payday candy bar. I discovered it later in life.
Yeah,
I just love
sure.
the salty.
Sure, you're totally nuts about Payday.
I am nuts about this salty peanuts and caramel. Yep. And very similarly, I guess, number 4 is the Snickers bar.
Yeah.
Very basic.
Overlap. Ate
overlap.
It.
You overlap. Do? Oh my God. Okay.
Wouldn't eat one stuck in a van in the woods.
Yes, you would. No, you gotta mix it with the score bar.
Oh, okay. Thanks. Thanks so much.
Number 3. Maybe because of my childhood, Jelly Bellies. I just love to mix the Jelly Bellies.
Yeah, sure.
You mentioned this just a second ago. Number 2, the score bar.
Sorry, but yes.
That's quite all right. And my number 1, I don't even know if they make this anymore. And there is a tidbit of, if you like the band Taking Back Sunday, they named a song after something I said. I called this the Nutrageous. I called it the New American Classic.
Oh.
And the
isn't it just the Payday bar?
No, it's Nutrageous is Reese's peanut butter. Sort of like the Payday bar, but with Reese's.
No, there's no peanut butter in Payday.
Right, exactly. But so it's Reese's caramel. It's so good. They named a song called New American Classic.
After what awesome. You said, like you
yeah,
called it that.
Was,
and they, oh, that's cool.
He was my voice student. So Adam Lazare was my
so
voice
he
student.
He stole.
Yeah, he said to me, he's would good. You mind if I used that? And I didn't know what he was going to use it for. And it's actually a really beautiful song.
Oh,
that's awesome.
So, yeah.
That's awesome. What's the name of the band again?
Taking Back Sunday.
Yeah.
If anybody knows their emo or screamo bands,
the
you will know.
We took back screamo. The night. Now we're taking back Sunday.
Exactly.
All right. Well, it's my turn.
Yes.
Top 5 candies, no, not even close to overlap with you.
Oh, wow.
Number 5, they're the new hot kid on the candy block, Tony's Chocolonely.
Oh, yeah, those are good.
A little high-end maybe for our listeners. But
yeah, I think so.
Save those up a little great. Money. Get yourself a Tony's Chocolonely. Number 4, I'm not sure if this is just regional or if these are everywhere. You rarely see them, mostly in bowling alley vending machines. Getz's caramel creams.
Oh, I don't even know what that is. Wow.
It's a caramel, and it's got this like non-dairy cream thing in the center, and it is. They come in packs of about 10 or 12.
Oh my god!
Kirker,
really good.
Kirker,
get some Getz's. Number 3 is, I feel like, a dramatically underrated, never talked about candy bar, the 100 grand bar.
Oh, that's a good one.
Got a little of everything. You like Nestle's Crunch? It's in there.
Crunch.
You like Milky Way? It's in there.
Yeah.
Oh. Got it all. Number two, Reese's peanut butter cups.
Oh,
not
yes.
sure how you can have a list without that. And number 1, which again, any list without this is not really a list of best candy. M&M's, baby.
Just plain? Plain M&M's?
Plain? It's candy. What? Just plain candy?
I
yes. What, you got to mix it with relish? Yeah.
It's a good,
good enough for World War I. I think it's good enough for you, Janice.
All right, here we go. Mine, number 5 is Caramello. I love Caramello bars. Hmm. Bit into a Caramello.
I feel like that's a CBS deep dive.
I love Caramello. I bit into a Caramello and I found
Anthony.
Gold.
Caramello Anthony.
Number 4, You might remember him from Grandma's Candy Dish. Coffee Nips.
Oh, wow.
I love coffee
nips. Hated hearing you say that. But okay.
Coffee Nips. Ugh. I like to suck on a coffee nip.
I'm cutting that.
No, keep it in. Damn you.
That's what you'll be babbling as you come out of anesthesia.
Coffee nips.
I'm going to be like, Goldie, help me.
Number three, it really satisfies. Snickers. Love a Snickers bar. Number two, I was surprised not to see this. It was kind of a straight down the middle 98 mile an hour fastball with a Twix bar. Yeah. I love Twix.
Had it replaced it with 100 grand.
Oh. Yeah,
but I agree. It would be number six.
Great. And Goldie, overlap at number one, plain M&M's.
Wow.
Yes.
Love it. Just as we know, a glass dish. Of plain M&M's is the height of any party. That's where I'll be hanging out.
Yep. Eating way too many.
Yep. All right. That was a fun list today. Thank you, JC. Next week is mine. Here we're going to do top 5 days of your life.
Oof.
Top 5 days
like
of
ever?
Your life. Yeah, ever. Wow. That's your life.
That's your life, right?
That's pretty deep.
That's not your life. It's my life.
So start thinking about those top 5 days and how you're going to dance around your spouse when the list is over. All right, let's end the show as we do every week on a high note. Thank you, Tom and Max. Tom, we're hoping we'll return soon. And we just got a great email from Max with some thoughts about Maestro, which were awesome. So, Max, thank you for sharing that with us. I mean, I'll kick this off this same high note as last week. Guys, we went up in Yemen. I don't know what, I know the world is going to shit, especially right there. But for some reason, as the tomahawks are flying overhead, we went from 97th to 93rd in Yemen.
We're viral. Gone viral.
So that's it. Thank
you,
Yemen.
That's why we got into this business.
Thank you, whoever's listening in Yemen. Thank you very much.
And hope you're on our side.
Stay safe out there, Yemen. Whoever's side you're on, thank you for listening.
Let me just turn this good morning, Yemen. Guinea podcast.
All right, who's up?
You go.
No, I can go. So I think things are going to line up this week. There's a high note that hasn't happened yet, but I think it's going to happen, that I'm going to surprise my kids with a Disney trip, which is one of my favorite things to do, is to give them something they asked for, don't realize that I heard, and then that they're getting it, not knowing. So I'll let you know how it goes. I mean, you'll be getting your butt looked at, but
I can save the video.
Send us photos or videos, because that'll be, I want to
Alec
see you.
Or me.
No, you, Alec, Goldie.
This is going to look like the Titanic submersible ending.
Oh,
it's going to crush the camera.
Yeah, the tools are going to implode.
Okay, my high note is another tennis-related one. Jannik Sinner, 22 years old, won the Australian Open, five-setter, down by two sets. It was incredible. He's a very likable guy. And it was an amazing match. That's
poor Daniil Medvedev.
I know, who I do
poor
also love.
Daniil. Yeah, he's got a very large forehead and two eyes in his name. Daniil.
D-A-N-I-I-L.
Put tennis racket back in docking station.
What'd you say? I think he would survive in the cold too. But that's a great high note.
Thank you.
And to remind you folks, we will be talking with Scott Grimes next week while I'm getting a colonoscopy, but it will be that day. And thank you all for listening. Thank you too for being awesome.
Thank you.
We will talk to you again next week.
You might be there.
Terrible dismount.
So is that the dismount you want to go with, or do you think we should re-record that? Right.
No, I can tighten it up.
No, I'm saying that's the Sopranos.
Oh.
That's what you think. Because if it comes back that that was a good dismount, then...
fuck it. We'll go with that.
I know. I'm ending the show.